Ms. Glenn, from an endocrinologist point of view, and that would be the top highest trained medical expert in the field of hormones. So thymus gland, this is about all it said. It doesn't do anything. Up until puberty, it may do something. It may help with the immune system, but after that, it does nothing. It's useless. You know, we don't even think about it at all. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, what about this young boy that had his thymus gland? It was supposed to be active, but they gave him thymus extract, and he completely recovers. Well, it's not like I'm in charge of research at hospital facilities. If I were the chief of staff of a hospital, I would recommend thymus extract. Anyway, probably one of the most acceptable theories of cancer. It was formulated by Sir McFarlane Burnett, the Australian Nobel Prize winner. Since I haven't won a Nobel Prize, I feel pretty good quoting him. And by the way, ask yourself the question, is cancer on the decline, or is it decreasing in abundance, or is it increasing year by year? Well, folks, it's increasing. If a cancer treatment physician brags that they have a 2.5% success rate at curing cancer, I don't know that that's really something that we should be bragging about. What that means is a 97.5% failure rate. Anyway, he goes on to say, the Sir McFarlane Burnett, of the billions of new cells produced in the body each day, some are going to end up abnormal. They will just be defective. Does that make sense? So one of the functions of these T cells that's produced by your thymus gland is to be able to recognize these abnormal cells and just go ahead and destroy them. However, if these T cells are not properly activated by the thymus hormone or the thymus gland, these abnormal cells may actually take and develop into clinical cancer. Hence, there may be a really critical role of the thymus gland throughout our adult life, not just childhood, at the prevention of cancer. Now, get this right here. I don't care what experts think if they're wrong, but I sure like what they say and what they think if they're right. I think we can begin to understand why cancer increases with age. And get this right here. I find this very, very interesting. It's been shown that the antibody response of old mice is only about 5% that of young mice. So your thymus gland, that's your source of antibodies. And if the thymus gland is in good working order, it can actually generate these antibodies to help assist your body in understanding what's friend or what's foe. So what if you have a foreign virus or a bacteria or a fungus or a parasite or a cancer cell like I've just been discussing? You want your thymus to be robust. And if it can recognize that, then you're in good shape. All right. This is the experiment. It's been shown that the antibody response of old mice is only about 5% that of young mice. Old mice, and I'm just assuming that means they're at the very end of their lifespan, they cannot reject cancer cells injected into them. However, now get this, if old mice are given thymus at the same time as they're being injected with cancer cells, cancer does not develop. Maybe we could say in all mammalian species, there tends to be a drop-off of thymus activity with advancing years and aging, which also corresponds to an increase of cancer and infections. So it might be a good idea today that we talk about what can one do to stimulate or to help assist the thymus gland. I tried to look up some research this morning, but there's going to be some points that I kind of want to bring up right here. Your thymus gland, when I had to do cadaver dissection, it was just not great fun for me. I mean, but I had to do it to make the greater the class. I mean, have you ever had to do anything in your life that you probably didn't enjoy, but you did it because you felt like, okay, this is really But when we had to take the saw and go down the center of the breastbone or the sternum and kind of pry it open, guess what was lying just under the sternum, under the breastbone? That would be the thymus gland. Of course, I still remember it was a very, very gray color. I almost imagined to myself that if the person was alive and I saw that, it probably would be more of a pink color, you know, because the life is in the blood and blood is pumping. But you, the thymus in the cadaver that I had, I mean, it was just about non-existent. I think it was just like a little sliver, like a small atrophied twig in there. Not much to look at. So, let me give you some ideas here. Your thymus gland is absolutely the largest gland of your immune system. The largest. I'm not so certain that it doesn't completely dictate every immune response that we have. I think it's been well documented that it produces multiple hormones. Some of them, we don't even know what they do. And that doesn't mean they're not valid, does it? Just because we may not understand exactly and precisely how each substance that the thymus gland produces, just because we don't understand it doesn't mean it's not doing its job and not working right. You tell me, would you rather your thymus be in good repair, or do you want it to be deficient? Do you want it to become involuted, or do you want to see significant shrinkage of your thymus? Well, of course you don't. But the largest gland and the director of all the troops within your immune system is the thymus gland. Even when the stem cells deep in your bone marrow produce white blood cells and lymphocytes, guess where they go, folks, to learn how to do their job? They go to the thymus gland. I was reading about studies on young rats. They would actually remove the thymus gland and the rat would get sick. But when they would inject the rat with thymus extract, lo and behold, they would get over their sickness. So you might surmise that your thymus gland is very, very weak if you can't get over anything. Let me just fill in the blanks here. Let's just say you have a child that has a mild cold, and that mild cold lasts in the child about 2 days, and they're up and playing again, or 1 day. It's probably closer to the truth. And the child doesn't feel like they have a fever any longer, and their cough is going away, and their normal energy and vitality return to them, and they're outside playing in about a day. But if you're an adult, any time that you have any infection that lasts longer than 7 days, that's a surefire indication right there that your thymus gland is not doing its job and not working right. I don't necessarily know why it is, but it takes about 7 days for the thymus gland to seed the immune system with new cells and to make more specific antibodies that are necessary to neutralize or kill bacteria or viruses or parasites or funguses. So, we're kind of cutting down to the chase here. Anything that hangs on for longer than 7 days, maybe you should consider that your thymus gland is just not working up to par. I kind of like the number 7 anyway, right? Isn't that a perfect number? And of course, going back to the Australian Nobel Prize winner, you tell me what you think about this. If research is indicating more and more that it may in fact being a weakened immune system that may be the ultimate cause of cancer, does it make sense that if all we use are chemotherapeutic drugs and radiation, these are well-known things that severely weaken the immune system? And when I say weaken, I think it's pretty common knowledge in an oncology clinics that if you're given chemotherapy or radiation, you have an extremely high occurrence of secondary cancers. Why do you think they use the 5-year survival rate? Because if they use a 6-year survival rate, they would look pretty bad. Actually, if they use a 7-year, it would look like, why am I even bothered doing this? But don't let me talk you into it one way or the other. What I want to talk you into is, I want to lead you down a path that's going to lead to strengthening of vitality. If you want to have vitality and energy, and you want to be able to heal, you may want to pay a little bit of extra attention to your thymus gland. Do you think that a healthy immune system can eliminate cancer cells that form in the body? But it can't do it without the thymus gland. You tell me, is radiation, is that toxic to the body? Pretty much. Let me ask you, has radiation been shown to cause cancer? Absolutely. My word. Do pilots that fly at 32,000 feet, do they have more cancer than those that are on the ground? Of course they do. Anyway, so any infection that lasts longer than 7 days, there is a surefire indication that the thymus is just not working as well as it should. I don't know if you've ever heard of this before, but most women, they love soft, silky, smooth skin. But if the skin is rough, oh boy. Now, there is a surefire sign that your thymus gland is not doing its job. So, use your human reasoning and logic. If you have rough skin, does that mean you need more lotion? I didn't say it wouldn't help. Do you need more olive oil on your skin or coconut oil? Could be. But if the root cause of it is an underperforming thymus gland, we might want to spend a little bit of attention working on that. So, one of the elements, I'll just go ahead and tell you, I found considerable research, and I'm just simplifying it, that shows that your thymus gland requires an adequate amount of zinc for it to work properly. Zinc. You ever heard of zinc? I talked about zinc not that long ago when it comes to taking zinc lozenges at the first sign of a cold. Well, maybe part of that process is we're seeding the thymus gland with the very element that it needs so your body can respond properly to infection. How about that? I think vitamin C would be a big one also. The thymus gland will probably utilize all the vitamin C you give it. Now, can you overdose on vitamin C? Yeah, it's just not very likely. Can you overdose on zinc? Yes, it's happened. You remember years ago when the makers of Polydent put too much zinc in it and it caused problems or zinc toxicity? Sure, it's possible, but if you're consuming somewhere around 30 milligrams a day for an adult or maybe 10 to 15 for a child, it's not going to be a big deal. At least I haven't seen that. If you've had a problem with that, I would like to know about it. I mean, anything is possible, but as a general rule, zinc does not poison people when it's in the appropriate amount, in the same way that vitamin C does. Have you ever heard of a substance called DNA? Sometimes it's called deoxyribonucleic acid. Do you know that DNA is like the basic structural building block of life? You ever heard that? So if you're a kid and you love to play with Legos, you put all together and you build a structure. Pretty cool. Well, DNA is how you repair and fix and heal and build and rebuild and renew everything. DNA. Sounds to me like we would be better off if we had an endless production of DNA. Well, I have a question for you. I want you to guess currently, and it happens to be our topic today, which gland in the body can produce an endless source of DNA? What if your body uses that DNA to make high-quality white blood cells to overcome cancer with? I'll take it, buddy. Well, that would be the thymus gland. Next time you go to your doctor, just say, by the way, what does the thymus gland do? Of course, the website I looked at said it does nothing. Well, I mean, once you're past puberty, it does nothing. But you know what? I like that idea. What if you knew that there was a source of vitality? And that's why maybe you need to study the thymus gland as a source of tremendous vitality. One of the articles that I read was talking about its use in treating hepatitis. I still think that medical journal article about the little boy that was unconscious and he couldn't breathe on his own with a high fever, and it was about to die, was injected with thymus extract. To me, that's very impressive, but I'm pretty easy to please that way. Now, I know I'm biased, but I'm biased toward therapies that strengthen the human organism. Who wants their wife to be so weak she doesn't recover from surgery? Well, not me. Who wants to keep your body in good working order? Well, all of us do. Here you've got this gland, and they've discovered that one of the things it does is it creates an endless supply of DNA. You know, I don't even know that I can adequately explain what this means, but can I say it might be related to healing and repair and rejuvenation? I think it's been stated that if you have hate or anger or envy or fear or bitterness or resentment, yeah, those wreak havoc on the thymus gland. Anyway, if you'd like to call me on the radio and ask a question, it can be about anything. It doesn't have to be about this topic right here. I just looked at the clock, and I've already been talking for 20 minutes. So certainly I'd be more than tickled to entertain phone calls. So what would be some sign? And the number here at the station is 903-586-5257. There's a phone line open if you want to call in. Be my guest. But if you get sick all the time, that's your thymus right there. Not doing his job. Good morning and welcome to the program. How are you?
Yes, just fine. My wife has been having some problems in the right side around the bottom of the rib cage, and had kind of a feel of like a fluttering or gurgling or something over there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she's thinking about going to the doctor, but wanted to get some kind of blood test before she went. And anyway, I didn't know.
Well, how can you get a blood test before you go to the doctor?
Oh, I just thought to something to just for general purposes. Just I guess what I'm calling about is there any particular thing a person can should be looking for in some sort of a blood test to know about how your liver's doing, or
well, that's easy to do. But I would imagine that if you go to a physician and say, "I've got discomfort in this upper right quadrant, right at the edge of my rib cage,"
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the things you have to consider. Well, what's going on with your bile ducts, or your biliary tree, or your liver, or your gallbladder? And so, yeah, they can do what are called liver enzymes. But I want to tell you this, your liver could be 70% dead, and I mean this seriously, and the enzymes will still check out just fine. Study after study demonstrates that, which it just kind of boggles my mind that, okay, 70% of the liver is essentially dead, but it's still in good enough shape to make sure the enzymes stay low, so it's not always the truest reflection. But I was going to simplify it and say this right here.
Mm-hmm.
If she consistently wakes up between 1 to 3 o'clock in the morning, as in 1 a.m. to 3 a.m., this is going to be when your liver is at peak function.
Mm-hmm.
And if your liver is just filthy, dirty with debris, it's going to detox big time, and a person's going to wake up wide awake. So that's mm-hmm. one consideration. If you tell me that your wife eats certain types of food and it just makes her burp and belch, and she grinds her teeth, and she constantly clears her throat like a... that was an over example, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But if she has to clear her throat, if her jaws hurt, if she's prone to headaches on the right side, if she has discomfort in the right shoulder blade constantly, if she has little bumpy, sometimes it's called chicken flesh. I'm not telling you that your wife has chicken flesh. I'm just saying on the back of the arms and the tricep area and the shoulder, if it's bumpy, little bitty red bumps, man, that's a sure sign the gallbladder is not doing its job properly. Another sign would be you could be just sitting, watching a movie, minding your own business, and the scene is just very quiet, and all of a sudden your wife's tummy is just gurgling and churning and rumbling, and you can hear it from like, oh, man, can you hold it down? Everybody's looking at us.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be a sign that maybe the gallbladder's not working right. But in the real world, when she has a bowel movement, if it tends to be like a medium to darker brown color, that's almost ideal. But if it's a light brown or a yellowish or a clay color, well, then that's where the gallbladder's all backed up. So, but there's any number of ways to do this. But you also have what's called your hepatic flexure, and that's where the colon is also. But that's kind of where I would narrow it down. I can tell you what old-time doctors used to do. They would take a blood pressure cuff, and they'd put it on the right calf muscle. And the liver's a right-sided organ, the gallbladder's a right-sided organ, but they'd put the blood pressure cuff around the thickest part of the calf, or around, just like you would your arm, but you're going to put it around your calf, and they would pump it up. And if they got to 180 millimeters of mercury, you know, just pumped up to 180 and hold it there, if your wife says, well, I feel pressure, but it doesn't hurt at all, but if she has a full-blown Charlie horse or a cramp or sharp pain in her calf, and I've had a lot of people tell me it hurts in their liver when I do that, because what it does is it creates venous and arterial pressure congestion. It just kind of backs up the blood flow through the portal vein. So that's another thing that I would look at. That would be a sure sign that the liver is where the problem is. And all I'm trying to say is you can go for a blood test and it can come back normal, but that doesn't change your situation, because a lot of times they're looking for things that are so far out of the range where they can say, well, this is what she has. But a physician worth her salt can probably just easily examine and determine where a problem's coming from just with a physical examination.
I should say, it seems like she's had problems in this side for several years, and just recently was deciding she would do some juice fasting, and it seems like the problems got worse. And so anyway, I don't know if that's a clue, but
When she wakes up in the morning, does she feel like really alert and awake, or is she pretty sluggish in the morning?
Pretty sluggish, yeah.
Well, that's a pretty typical liver symptom. So, I mean, I'm just trying to throw some things out there and hopefully make this make sense to you. So if any of them ring true,
yeah.
Sometimes when the liver is just very sluggish, it just takes a while to wake up in the morning and get going. It just does.
So probably to find out about this, either a physical exam or a sonogram,
yeah,
or something like that.
But all this is dependent on the physician's level of knowledge and skill and expertise, which I know that you're thinking, well, don't they have that? Well, you know, I hear stories all day long. And so if you have a persistent issue that's not going away, it would really help if the physician could truly find out what the root cause of her problem is and then recommend the appropriate course of action. And the course of action is usually going to be involved with, okay, let's discuss what you're eating. That's one of the reasons why juicing fasts don't work with the liver sometimes, is because they provide way too many carbohydrates. And the carbohydrates that you consume are going to just tax the liver with more oxidation molecules than what it can handle. So, but does she still have her gallbladder?
Oh yeah, and I should say about the juicing, most of it's been vegetables like spinach, celery, beet, but maybe throw an apple in to make it a little bit more palatable. A few carrots. You know, something like that.
And between the apple and the beet and the carrots, those all have just boatloads of sugar in them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think it's a great thing that you're doing, and certainly I would encourage anybody to try that. But usually if the liver's an issue, we want to find out, is it due to hardened, congealed bile is blocking the bile ducts? Because it'll certainly hurt if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of when women take birth control pills that they have the highest risk of all time for having gallbladder problems?
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, and they show that women that take birth control pills, they have some of the highest stroke rates of all time. But I'm just trying to illustrate a point how that can disturb liver function. I just think that birth control, and she probably hasn't even taken birth control pills. It's just an example.
Right.
Well, what else can you tell me about her? I'd love to help you.
She's had a hard time with weight loss. It seems like anything she eats tends to make her gain, and so that's why she was, you know, trying to do a vegetable fast.
Well,
she's had some itching.
Itching, and that's a sure sign the liver's not working right.
Right. Yeah.
Well, can I give you just one simple thing that you can do as soon as you get off the phone?
Mm-hmm.
If you have just a simple fabric tape measure, what do they cost at the dollar store? Oh, that's right, they cost a dollar or less. But if you take the fabric tape measure, usually you're looking at 1 inch below the navel or the belly button, and you're just trying to measure the largest circumference of her waist. And then you take the tape measure and you go around the widest part of the hips. That's called the waist to hip ratio. And I really am trying to make this sound simple. I just know I probably won't do a great job of it, but here goes. Let's just say that her waist is 38 inches and her hips are 40 inches. Where's the calculator? Here's the calculator right here. Okay. 38 inches divided by 40 inches, which is her waist measurement. I come up with a number 0.95. In women, if that number is 0.80 and above, and of course the higher the number goes, that means that her body is functioning only on carbohydrates. That's a main source of energy. And what that'll do is, that's going to make her, she's just not going to burn fat. And so you can, and that's the only way I ever see this change. If you can get that ratio to go down below 0.8, she will be as feminine and beautiful and skinny as she wants to be, depending on what that ratio is. And so if she measures above 0.8, that means her body is only choosing to burn carbohydrates. It's not going after the fat that she has in reserve. She's got enough fat in reserve right now to walk back and forth to Houston 25 times, right?
I don't know that I put it that way. But
I'll say it for myself. All of us have enough fat, even if you're a lean person. Mm-hmm. You've got enough fat on your body as an endless source of energy almost. Even if you're real thin, you can still walk to Houston. I didn't say you could do it quickly. Mm-hmm. Actually, I could probably make it in 15 days if you gave me a head start. I'm joking about that. I don't want to have to walk to Houston. But so, and those are things that are so hard on the liver. If the primary source of energy that your body gets energy from is sugar and carbohydrates, that's just a recipe for liver problems. Because any excess sugar, your body's going to form what are called triglycerides. The only stored form of fat that we have in the body is called a triglyceride. Last time I checked, you don't really store the fat that comes from butter, and you don't store the fat that comes from coconut oil. You sure don't store the fat that comes from olive oil. That's why people that consume all those things are real thin and skinny. But you store the fat that's converted from sugars into fat. And maybe she's not eating carbohydrates. So option B would be that when she's stressed, her body releases cortisol. And cortisol converts her protein or her muscle into sugar. Easy enough when you're under stress. Does that sort of make sense, or is that a little bit too much?
Well, that's fine. I was just going to ask if the body is burning only carbs, how do you get it to burn something besides carbs?
Well, I'm going to make it sound real simple. What you do for it takes about 2 weeks to reset the body. And the way that you do that and encourage it to burn fat for energy is you don't have any grain whatsoever. No fruit of any kind. No honey, no sugar. That's it. And in its place, any time that you restrict, so if she's doing a juice fast that involves carrots, beets, and apples, that's enough right there to bring it to a screeching halt. I'm not against those things, but in her situation, would her health improve if she lost weight? Yes, if it was the appropriate type of weight. But so the way that you do that is you avoid anything with sugar in it for 2 weeks. But what you can eat is, you can eat high-fat meats, you can eat steak. I don't care if you have uncured bacon if you want to. If you don't like that, fine by me also. Butter, olive oil. I love eggs, because eggs are 65% pure fat. If she's the type of person that doesn't do well with eggs, I understand that also, and I'm fine with it.
So go with totally low-sugar vegetables, low-carb vegetables.
Exactly. And in simplicity, that's just going to be stuff like spinach and kale and broccoli and cauliflower, zucchini, squash, stuff like that.
Okay, now what about sweet potatoes? Is that too sugary?
It is for the two-week period, because what you can do is you can quickly get your carbs up. And as long as she's got an overabundance of carbohydrates in her bloodstream, in her body will never choose to burn fat. It'll just choose to store it.
And I know one of the reasons, you know, the beet is in there is because I think beets are really good for the liver, aren't they?
Yeah, they can be great. But we have to identify what's the primary cause of the problem. And for all I know, And this is probably what I should have said a while ago, and I promise you I'm not trying to be offensive, but if she failed on the juice fasting or it didn't work out so well, she probably just has a very, very fatty liver. That's almost where I see all the problems. When people try to cleanse or improve themselves and there's a failure, it's a fatty, fatty liver. So if a person you know, really doesn't take care of themselves, this is not your wife, I'm thinking about somebody else. If they eat very, very late at night, or any eating after 6 o'clock, they're just asking for all that to build up as fat in the liver. It's a pretty good way to get the liver to not even remotely work properly. It'd probably be about 5% of capacity. But fatty livers, those are everywhere.
So tell me, how do we get rid of a fatty liver and have a healthy liver?
Well, I can't tell you everything in this program, but I'm getting started. What I mentioned earlier, I only told you half of the equation.
Okay.
So what is the age of your wife?
Early 50s.
Okay. So what number do you want me to punch into the calculator? 50, 51, 52, 53, 54?
Let's go 54.
Okay. So if I take the number 180 and I subtract it by her age, which is 54, my recommendation is that she purchase what's called a heart rate monitor.
And, I'm sorry, what?
A heart rate monitor.
Okay.
I've seen them on eBay and Amazon for $25.
Yeah.
I've also seen them for $250, but okay. I don't need a satellite in outer space tracking my every step, telling me if I'm bending over or standing up straight. I don't need that. Mm-hmm. Now, I have one, and it's just a very simple one. It comes from a brand that you probably have never heard of before called Timex.
Mm-hmm.
I was the one that came up with the jingle back in the 70s that it takes the licking and keeps on ticking. You know, I'm just joking about that. But what you have is you have the heart rate monitor comes with what's called a chest strap. And I realize she's a girl, so she's the one that has to figure out how all that stuff works with a sports bra, because I am not smart enough to figure out how to get that to fit with a sports bra, but she can, I guarantee you. I just know that if I put the bra in the dryer, I am in big, big trouble, right? Okay, did you know I have 5 daughters? It doesn't go well if I put them in the dryer. I'm in trouble every time. Why do they always tell on me to their mother when I do something wrong? Anyway, but what she would do is she would take a heart rate monitor, the chest strap, it has the transceiver. It's very, very accurate. It will tell me exactly every time that her heart makes a beat, and the watch part of it, there's just a little button you push for heart rate, and it is just accurate and spot on. So for her, if she gets her heart rate during exercise above 126, all she's doing is she's telling her body to burn sugar and to crave sugar and to eat sugar. So she needs to exercise at 126, not above it, but below it, or right at it. And so even if she gets up to 128 and says, oh, Dr. Morgan doesn't really know what he's talking about, I think I'm going to hit 138 for the next 2 miles. Well, she probably won't lose any weight, and she'll come home and she'll have a ravenous appetite for those brownies that you bought at Brookshire Brothers, and she'll go hog wild on them. But what you want to do is you have to train your body to burn fat, and this is a process. So for 2 weeks, if she doesn't have any grain of any kind, she doesn't have any starches like you. And I think sweet potatoes are wonderful for the liver. We would both agree. Avocados, too. Avocados are probably the one that I can probably get in there just because it's so high in fat. You know, the one type of meal that I see work every single time is a salad. I know that doesn't sound impressive, but if she says, sweetheart, I have gone to the store and purchased filet mignon, and I've cooked it medium well just the way I like it, I'm going to cut it up, put on a salad with avocados and olive oil, and I'm going to eat it. And you're going to say, what? I'm going to have some too. But if she did that, you just wouldn't put bread or croutons in it. You wouldn't add fruit to it. And if she exercises and starts the process, she will start training her body to burn fat. I had a woman that came to see me this week, and I think she was literally a little bit discouraged that she had only lost 5.5 pounds in 2 weeks. Going, why would you be discouraged that you lost 5.5 pounds when all you've been doing is gaining weight for the last 3 years? 5.5, that was pretty good just in 2 weeks. And a lady that came to see me a week before, she lost 17 pounds. And she felt like, I really didn't do this very well. But I said, how did you do it? And her response was, I didn't eat any sugar. I mean, I can't make this stuff up. It works this way every single time, but you've got to retrain the body to do this. So what I'm doing is I'm trying to give you a precise way that she can win and be very healthy. I want her to be so healthy that she can wash and wax your pickup at least once a week because she has so much extra energy and she feels great. I mean, don't you think that's reasonable?
Yeah. Is a rebounder a good exercise?
For what?
For this exercise at 126.
She can try it, but I mean, that's got to be the most boring exercise of all time.
Well, she has some Achilles tendon problems that's made it walking difficult. Everything was going good until a couple of years ago. She had Achilles tendon problems and had to basically
all that goes away without sugar. Because when your primary source of energy is going to be carbohydrates and sugar, everything starts breaking down, as in everything. You can't keep the body well. Fat is the key. If she wants to be healthy, we have to give her more fat. So any time that you greatly reduce grains and starches and sugars and fruit, if you don't increase fat consumption, a person's going to feel like they're royally cheated. And so what happens when you convert sugar into energy in the human body? Yeah, you produce it into fat, which is not the type of fat you need, but it creates so much oxidant stress, everything begins to break down every single time. Nobody gets away with that. Haven't you ever seen somebody at Walmart that their feet and ankles and knees are in such bad condition that they have to get that motorized wheelchair because it would be a Herculean effort just to walk across the parking lot? I feel bad for them.
Yeah.
So what I'm telling you is very, very precise. I realize I can't. If I only had like 2 hours, I could probably flesh that a little bit better. But there are many supplements. I know it's comical because, I mean, has any physician ever sat down with you and tried to explain how to restore your wife's health? I mean, just
we don't usually run. We don't usually go to the doctor too often. I want to ask a question. I don't know where you're going with that. But I want to ask about the 126. You said right at 126. Is below that, below and up to good? Or
yeah, I would say within 5 beats per minute of 126 would be a pretty good range for her to be in. So, which means if y'all are walking up a steep hill in the evening, and she gets to 130, she's going to have to slow it down to let that number come back down. Because if it goes above 126, she's kind of whipping her adrenal glands into making more cortisol, saying, are you kidding? Our heart's beating too fast. We need some sugar. And that's what happens when your heart rate goes above the 126 for her situation.
She happens to have a ring that gives her heart rate. Is the pulse at the hand just as good as across the chest?
Has a ring that gives her her pulse rate?
Yeah, it has a little readout on it that tells her
Is this like a James Bond ring that has a special?
I don't remember. We got it on the internet sometime. It seemed to, be doing pretty good.
I just know the heart rate monitor for the chest straps are just dead on accurate. I don't know about the ring monitor.
Okay.
I mean, I've had a lot of people wear Fitbits, and I really think that they're pretty poor. But that's just my opinion. I just don't think they work that good.
Oh, I derailed. You were saying, has anybody sat down and talked to us?
Yeah, I mean, that's when you go to a doctor, you got to tell me what your expectations are. I mean, if you want to know what blood tests can they order, because as a general rule, doctors don't order blood tests until you come in and state what your problem is. But they can very easily do all these things. But I would say to me, this ain't rocket science. So if you push in your wife's lower liver and she screams, I would say that's pretty big honking, swollen, inflamed liver. And that ain't good. And so we have to find a way to reverse that, so we have to have a pretty good game plan. But what I'm telling you is very precise.
Okay. Well, I sure appreciate it.
You betcha. Thank you for your phone call.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All righty. If you want to join me on the air, there's a phone line. It is open just for you, 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Good morning. Let me turn the radio down.
Actually, it doesn't sound bad at all.
Okay, all right. If you deal with it, I can too.
Good deal.
Down in Fairfield, Texas, this is over a year that I've tried to reach you, and I was trying to reach you on Sunday afternoons. And finally, I called the radio station, and they told me that you weren't on Sunday afternoon. That was a repeat.
That's right.
So nobody ever told me that.
Well, Rance, I'm sorry.
That's all right. And finally, I talked with Randy Featherston, and he told me how it worked. Here's my question. I'm 81 years old. I used to say I don't take any drugs, legal or illegal, but I do take one. They used to give me Tamsulosin, the VA did, for my prostate.
Mm-hmm.
They just ran out of that, so they gave me one called Alfuzosin. And I don't have a clue what that is.
That makes two of us.
Okay. And so, but I take one of those a day. And it seems to solve the problem to keep my urine running.
Mm-hmm.
But I always tend toward natural things if I can. I work out twice a week at the health club. I'm 5'8", weigh 165 pounds. Here's my question. Part-time, I'm constipated. And I don't know if it's my diet. I live alone. I grind my own pancakes every day. Well, I grind up 3-4 days at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And I will make a big pancake, kind of unleavened bread, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And put some pecans, there's nuts in it, the whole grains, millet, quinoa, this type of thing. I'll even take beans, lentils, and I grind them into it also. Makes a great pancake, use peanut butter and applesauce, and I make my own applesauce. So I just enjoy that in the morning. I try not to eat any sugar, and I don't try to, it's no problem, I just don't eat sugar if I can.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't have the energy I used to. And is the window closing? Is that a natural thing?
I don't want to say yes to that. Let me tell you why. Because I think that you should have tremendous vitality all the days of your life. You should be like a candle that burns pretty bright and hot, but at the very end it just kind of snuffs out. Does that sound reasonable?
It does. And people say that I do that, but I don't feel like I once did.
Well, I don't want you laughing at what I'm saying, but if you do, that's your choice, you can. But I was reading yesterday about ancient Olympians, and sometimes when I go to half-price books in Dallas, I just find a book that just catches my interest, but it's about the ancient, you know, wrestlers and pancration and boxers of the Olympics and the
right.
athletes. And what is fascinating to me is what their diet was.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And you know what the greatest champions, you know what that says some of the things they ate?
They
would eat huge amounts of beef and cheese.
Really?
But the very thing that I read yesterday is they didn't eat regular bread, but they would only eat unleavened bread.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
kind of like what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
But in the book, it was talking about the high glycemic index. And so one thought is you don't have to really eat sugar, but you can eat something that easily converts into sugar.
Such as?
As wheat.
Okay.
I mean, there's nothing you can do to stop that turning into sugar about as fast
right.
as possible. So,
yeah.
Anyway, but as far as energy production goes, I have an experiment for you if you're willing to try it.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm writing as you're talking.
I don't have any magical way to know everything about you, but there's a couple, three things that I would probably look into.
Before we get into it and before I forget, can you give me your phone number of your office?
It's 903-586-8114.
8114. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
You're welcome. But I am a huge fan of what's called bee pollen.
Bee pollen, yes.
Mm-hmm. So if there's a local honeybee grower and they have bee pollen for sale, you better buy it.
Okay.
And one unusual, actually it's not unusual, but it's one very interesting compound that's found in bee pollen. It's called gonadotrophins. And you see the word trophin, and this is something that promotes growth.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so if you took 1 to 2 teaspoons of bee pollen a day, just tell me if you have more vitality. Now, this is a guess on my part, but I think it might prove to be very, very interesting with you. There is an herb that comes from Bulgaria. It grows kind of low to the ground in this bush, but it's called tribulus.
Tribulin?
Tribulus.
Tribulus.
Sounds like an ancient Roman gladiator.
Right.
Tribulus Maximus is entering the Colosseum.
Yeah.
Everybody stand up.
He's a good man.
Yeah. Tribulus. But if you were to take the herb called Tribulus, I would venture a guess that after a couple, 3 months, you'd probably weigh about 3 or 4 pounds more of muscle than what you have right now.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Number two, this is just my opinion, so take it as such. But if I see someone that's losing their energy, I think thymus gland and adrenals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm choosing to nourish them and feed them and support them. And one of the ways to take care of the thymus gland is by consuming zinc and vitamin C. I sort of mentioned that earlier.
I heard that earlier.
Good job. I can tell you're paying attention. Thanks.
Uh-huh.
It means the world to me. Number next, I am in love with calf thymus extract. And I know philosophically...
Wait a minute. Calf?
Calf. Thymus extract.
Thymus extract. Got it.
There's a lot of people in the world that if you mentioned meat, they just think it's the most repulsive thing of all time. You know, they say that that's evil. I don't really feel that way, and I'm not trying to convince somebody to follow my belief system, but calf thymus extract is just going to be thymus extract that comes from a calf.
Right.
I mean, calves are running around the pasture right now playing with each other.
Right.
Their mothers are probably getting after them and saying, "Children, calm down." You never had to do that, did you?
Oh, yes, I did.
But thymus extract, but one of my favorite ones for the adrenal glands, I like licorice root, and I love ashwagandha.
Oh, yes, ashwagandha.
So those are things that you might consider looking at, but if we ever get to that point where we can be more accurate and precisely identify where is the weakness in the body where you're not producing the energy that you want. But what I mentioned earlier, to me, I just find so fascinating that you get this endless production of DNA from your thymus gland if it's in good working order.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, buddy, that is the basic building block of life.
Really?
Because from that, you can make anything that you want. You want to make some new blood cells to fight an infection or cancer? As long as you've got DNA, you can do that. That's where the thymus comes in.
Mm. So, in other words, keep your thymus healthy.
Oh, yes. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but it's called the thymus thump. It's almost like you've seen Johnny Westmuller on TV go, oh!
Yeah.
Actually, that's pretty poor Tarzan. But you just take your hand and kind of tap over your thymus gland. And maybe I would suggest that it gently increases blood flow.
Thymus right above your breastbone.
Oh, just under it.
Just under it.
Or beneath it.
Beneath it.
So if you put your hand on your upper breastbone, like where your collarbones are,
yeah.
I'll just say an inch or so below your collarbone in the center of your chest.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of tapping mine right now. You may not hear that. But that's one activity that can help increase the energy of the thymus, you know, like anything else. I don't even know how many times I've heard James Dobson say that the most toxic emotion of all time is anger. He's probably right. I'm not going to argue with him over that one. But so the opposite of anger would probably be love, wouldn't it?
Absolutely right, yeah. Perfect love casts out fear, and I'd probably cast out anger also.
I've never heard that before. I love it. Repeat it again.
Yeah, all the Bible says perfect love casts out fear, but it probably casts out anger also, because how can you love and be angry at the same time?
Oh, man, I like what you just said. How can you hold both as dominant thoughts at the same exact point in time? You
can't do it.
It's impossible.
That's right.
You know, and as a parent, wouldn't we be doing well if we could teach our kids to replace anger with love?
Oh, absolutely.
Or forgiveness, you know, fill in the blank.
But that's not the purveying of TV on
channel
today. And, of course, I haven't had TV in 30 years.
That's why you sound so super duper intelligent.
Yeah.
See, I was going to guess your age earlier, probably at 18 or 19, but you know, I was off a little bit.
I'll send you a check as soon as I get
off the phone.
Thank you very much.
I got the inverse though. You're 81 and I said 18. Is that correct?
That's right.
81. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I really do like the idea of you having vitality. And I know one definition of health is being able to function at a high level and have the energy to do whatever God puts in front of you. And I really like that very, very much. And the exact opposite of that would be, I am too tired to get up and do anything. So what we need is more vitality. But you've noticed everything that I've told you is it's living. Maybe not in the traditional sense. I know bee pollen's not living, but it comes from a living source.
Right, it does, yes.
And so when you want to have vitality, you're not going to do that if you put sugar in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So usually...
What about honey? Or manuka honey?
Sometimes I'll actually tell a person not to consume honey for about 2 weeks and focus more just on meat and vegetables. Then they tell me if there's a tremendous vitality that takes them over. Because if a person says that, then you know that they've got it. See, if a person ever gets to the point where they feel really good, I can't... You've heard the phrase before that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
I think that really the correct phrasing of that is you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him water the garden.
You're right. I agree. But you would like that to happen, wouldn't you?
Yes, you would. That's right.
Well, and what you want is you want the horse doing a good service and favor to you for giving him water.
That's right.
Well, the other day, or last week, I read the study from the American Medical Association Journal, and they asked physicians in a survey, could you please identify how many people living in America are actually very, very healthy? Okay. And the number they came up with was
3%. 3%? I couldn't believe that.
And their criteria was this, that they were of the ideal body weight, that was just one, that they have a healthy diet. Now, they didn't enumerate what that would be, but, you know, you and I would figure that out pretty easy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they said they had to be free of any health issues or maladies. They couldn't be taking any drugs.
Right.
So 3% of the population's ideal.
Wouldn't it be worth knowing what they're doing?
Oh, well, we already know what they're doing. They're not eating sugar.
Yeah, yeah. Years ago, there was a book written by William Duffy called Sugar Blues.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Very good book.
You realize I only just gave you maybe one foundational principle there. It's what they don't eat.
That's right.
But
yeah.
People like that, they're very, very physically active. And for all I know, they might even say they don't even exercise, because if we follow them around all day long, it may be that everything they do is exercise. Because they're out watering the garden and they're grinding, wheat and...
Well, I cut firewood in the fall and the winter.
Well, that would be called hard work, buddy.
At times it feels that way.
Yeah, but it sure is nice staying warm, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Nothing like a wood fire to keep you warm.
And plus, that's renewable energy. Wait a second. It gives off carbon. Al Gore would not like you for that.
Nobody can fly his jet around, but it produces 100 times more than my little wood fire.
Do you think he's ever thought of that?
He has, and probably some people have brought it up to him, but he doesn't appreciate that.
Oh, I know. I'm going to tell you how to live, but don't you dare tell me what's wrong with me flying my jet
That's
around.
Right. That's right.
Isn't it almost comical?
It really is, yeah. It's a real contradiction. We're seeing a degradation of the culture in this country today.
Well, it's got to be a huge shock to you, because you didn't grow up in this culture.
I didn't think I'd ever see this. What is interesting, of course, when they start debasing the currency, when Rome started doing that, mm-hmm. the society collapses. My mother lived through it in the Weimar Republic right after World War One in 1919 to 1923, when the Republic collapsed. And she said it would take a bushel basket of German mark to buy a pound of butter.
I really encourage you to call back. I love everything that you're saying, but we're completely out of time. Sorry.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll be in touch with you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right.